request of our MVP. He's going to lead us in our new favorite song.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome to the Mavs Fanatic Podcast.
Yo.
Recording live. Not really live. I guess we're recording live.
Somewhat.
Saturday night, Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, boy.
I'm Nick Angstead, writer of Mavs Fanatic, and joined with me, as always, the man, the one and only, Taemin Turner.
I'm so glad you said the one and the only. That really made me feel really
Finally,
good.
Someone else said it besides you.
Thank you.
And of course, in the studio this week, we got special guests this week. Mike and Mike in the afternoon. We got Michael Lark and Mike DuPont from Mavs Fanatic, both writers for us here on the blog. Guys.
So like the great value, Mike and Mike.
I like it. Mike and Mike on the Mavs Fanatic Podcast.
We're going to have to figure out a different name.
I don't think that one's going to fly for very long. Gentlemen, the Mavericks are in what I like to call the sweet spot. No, just kidding. They're in the dead zone. They're in this complete dead zone. They're 29-39.
I'm so mad at
There's
you.
There's 14 games left in the season.
I'm ticked at you.
And this past podcast, I convinced Taemin finally, after the Dirk 30-point game, the 30,000 game, after all that, after the wins, the great wins at home, that great home stretch where they were like 5-1. After all of that, I could convince Taemin, the tank commander of all of MFFLdom, to come on to team playoffs.
You know, there's a reason
And the Mavericks have completely let him down this week.
There's a reason why I always say at the end of the show, I'm right, you're wrong. That's the end of the story.
And I finally start to
listen to you, and you're 100% wrong. I can't stand you.
It was an interesting week for the Mavericks.
Interesting.
So they're four games back from the eighth seed now. They were within two at some point this week.
I had to go listen to Nick.
Now they're back within four, and they're in the 11th spot in the lottery. So just like the exact opposite place of where you want to be as an NBA team. You either want to bottom out or you either want to be in the playoffs. We've been talking about it all year. No need to go into all of that. But Mike DuPont, you're joining us on the podcast for the first time this year. Tell us.
It's good to have you, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. Good to
have
you guys.
Thank you.
Are you on team playoffs? Have you been on team playoffs or team tank this year, or have you waffled back and forth?
I would have to say that I've waffled with team optimism.
I like that.
I have been optimistic looking towards the final push, you know, with the last night looking, you had about 15 games, now 14 going to the final stretch of the season. Definitely felt like an optimist. But after, you know.
Optimistic for playoffs.
Optimistic for playoffs.
Like they were going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely optimistic for the playoffs. So you look at the seeding, you look at where they were with Portland and how far they were away from Denver. But I think in this week, you see Denver continue to ascend and you see Jokic continue to put out the performances that he's put out. The Joker. And it just continues to get tougher. The realistic opportunity continues, the window of opportunity continues to get smaller and smaller. I'm interested in what you think, Mike.
Other Mike. Mike Lark.
Man, see, so we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and I'm all about organic tanking. Like, yeah. You got to play your young players. Like, Dirk is not going to be here forever. Even after that, he scored at, 23 points in the first half a couple weeks ago.
25 points in the first half in that 30K game.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, I mean, okay, he's not going to be here forever. Play your young guys. Let's see what you got with them. And then see where the cards lie at the end of the season. But I'm not all about, you know, just, hey, you know, give up on the season. I mean, that's a defeatist
You're
mentality.
You're not about starting Nick Brissino?
Don't hit him, Brissino.
I mean, that's pushing it a little bit too much for me.
I think Nick Brissino probably couldn't guard me.
Wrong.
I think that's a challenge. I think he's putting it out there. That's a challenge. You want to mention that to him before a game?
Yeah, right now. I'll bring a basketball into the locker room and I'll just cross him over.
I'll mention it where you said you would beat him down.
Please do. At the beginning of the show,
like before we started the show, we were talking about LeVar Ball and how he shot like 46% from the free throw line in college. And I was like, I could do that like cold right now. And now we're talking about me crossing up like an NBA player.
I got one for you. Who wins?
The range of.
I got one for you. Who wins, Nick Angstead or LeVar Ball?
No, how about Nick Brissino, LeVar Ball?
Ooh. Got him.
I'm taking Ball, to be honest.
Yeesh. That's so mean.
The hot takes from Mike and Mike are coming, are pouring in.
Are we really calling them that?
for now.
Mike and Mike.
Until we've got to figure out here on that's not working for me. It's not working.
So the Mavericks had really tough loss this week at the Phoenix Suns, or at home against the Phoenix Suns. That loss was just took all the wind out of them. And they were on a 4-game winning streak, and then that game.
Been downhill ever since, despite their win in Washington, but still.
Surprisingly, well, I guess it was because Wes Matthews went out, but they did not have an answer for Devin Booker at all. Devin Booker could just do anything he wanted on the court, and it was disappointing. I mean, just to see the Mavericks team get so hyped up in that 4-game winning streak, have it in their grasp to make it 5, and then with Denver with such a tough schedule that week, and then just blow it away.
Now, Lark, how do you counter that? I'm trying something new here, Lark. How do you counter that when you're talking about, oh, we're going to dabble with a couple of different names here. We're going to see what we're going to throw a bunch of things against the wall and see what sticks. How do you feel about what you just coming back to your point about throwing the young guys out there, giving them a chance to go, and then you have Devin Booker come out and put on a performance like that? Is it almost to a point where you've got to be a little bit more? You've got to make an effort towards being a little bit more, I don't want to say competitive, but an effort towards maybe taking one guy out of the game. You've got two guys, you know, in Steph Curry and Yogi Ferrell, who both, you know, are standing, you know, a few inches shy of Devin Booker when they're out there on the court.
A few inches.
Yeah, I don't know. What happened on that play? I don't really know what was going on with Wes. I mean, I think you definitely double him at that point, but, I mean –
Yeah, I wasn't. Wes was injured at that play, right? And he wasn't. I don't even think he was on the floor.
Yeah, I don't think Wes.
He's been in and out of the lineup this week.
He has. He made a return last night, and he shot 0-for-5 from 3.
And the game, the elephant in the room that I really just don't want to bring up. That I
we're going to talk about. We're going to rip the Band-Aid off.
Here it comes.
I think we just need to bring it up. Is last night, Friday, March 17th, MFFLs all across. Where hopefully you guys were watching NCAA tournament stuff instead of the Mavericks, because the Mavericks dropped up just the worst game. They lost by 40 to the Philadelphia 76ers without their best player and potentially their second best player in Ben Simmons.
Sad.
It was bad. And I don't really want to talk about that game except for the fact that Justin Anderson had, you know, 19 points.
Hey, you put the young guys against the young guys. You put the young guys out there against those young guys from Philly, right? I mean, they don't have I don't think they have a guy older than, you know, maybe Sergio Rodriguez. Maybe
yeah,
I think
they traded him all away.
The oldest guy on that team. So you've got a bunch of, you know, first round.
Gerald Henderson's probably the oldest guy on their team, I think. But yeah,
you think Gerald Henderson's older than Sergio?
Probably. That'd be my guess.
You know, I think I would agree. Gerald Henderson Sr. is probably a lot older than Sergio Rodriguez. Gerald Henderson Jr. now, I think they might be closer than you anticipate. Sergio Rodriguez, he's been around for a while.
I'm gonna fact check that right now.
Playing in Spain, España.
Keep going while I fact check.
No problem. So we're ripping the Band-Aid off of that, and you look at you putting your young guys out there against a very young Philadelphia, a young athletic. Let me not forget to say that, minus when Jahlil Okafor is out on the court, a young athletic Philadelphia squad, and you throw everything against the wall and you have a performance like that. What is there anything? Do you even try to evaluate that game?
I mean, you could look at it, but it's just.
You just throw it in the trash, right?
What do you do with that?
Throw the box
40 score. Points. Yeah.
You have to move forward. I mean, it stinks to lose, especially by 42 points to a team that's not that good, a young team like that. But, you know, one thing this week, Nerlens Noel talked about how how the difference of playing in Dallas is compared to Philly is that you have veterans that will hold younger players accountable because they actually have veterans, and they're going to move on from this. The veterans are going to take over in this, or are going to take over this, and going to say, "Hey guys, let's move on. We got another game to play against Brooklyn."
By the way, DuPont was right. Gerald Henderson is 6 months younger than Sergio Rodriguez, but there was another guy in there that we didn't think about. Tiago Splitter is actually on the 76ers. Who knew that Tiago Splitter was a 76er right now? I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
I knew it last year.
Where in the world is Tiago Splitter?
Wait. Tiago Splitter.
It always makes me think of Iago from Aladdin. Tiago. Iago.
I don't know. Hey, so I will say this about this game.
Go for it.
With the 76ers. The thing that sticks out to me most when you lose by 42 points, that's...
the score?
Yeah.
The score sticks out.
That... the effort. I mean, like, you would have to really not put in any effort in that game to lose by that many points. I mean, and for a team that were this close to the finish, I get it, you're playing your young guys. But, I mean, dude, I mean, you gotta put your heart and soul out there for every single game, and we're just so close to the finish. We're, what, now 4 games out? I mean,
you gotta
put out something a little better than that.
This team has had this problem all year, though, right? We've seen these games. We mentioned before the show that game against the Grizzlies at home where they almost didn't score 60 points. I mean, they've had these games where they just come out and they look like, you know, a D-League team.
A really bad team.
And it's really, I don't know if it's really an indication of the play overall, but I think it's more indicative of the makeup of the roster when you look at things like not being able to score and you're looking at other guys. I mean, we talk about this all the time. You look at other guys besides Dirk and Harrison that you can really rely on.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got two wild cards in your youngsters, you know, and sometimes they do roll, they do come up aces for you, but then there's other nights like last night.
Yeah, Mike Lombardi of The Ringer, he mostly does NFL. He used to work for the Patriots, but he has this thing for players where he says you're either 100% player, a 50% player, 25% player, any kind of percentage players. We're like 100% player, guy that's going to bring it every single night. Like, you definitely know what you're going to get from that guy. And then a 50% player, you're getting, you know, the greatness of him 50% of the time, and then 50% of the time he's just going to go away. And the 20% guys, you're like, I don't know, like, 1 out of 5 nights, I'm going to get a solid NBA player, but maybe not. And so the Mavericks they started the season with a bunch of these 50% guys where you're either going to get it. You got a Yogi Ferrell who's, you know, going to bring it every once in a while. You have, you know, a Seth Curry where you're going to get great nights. And he's had some awesome stretches in the season. I mean, 20 points a game. He's been better than his brother from certain stretches of the season.
Arguably the second half of the season.
Certain
arguably.
Parts of the season, he's been better than
that's a true fact. He has been better at times.
Yeah.
Let me ask a question real quick, though.
Yeah.
You know, following this huge loss, if the Mavericks once again look really bad against Brooklyn, which, good grief, that'll be really sad. But if they look really bad against Brooklyn, I mean, where do they go? I mean, does the tanking process just begin? Not organic tanking, not alternative tanking, just straight up tanking.
Are you too far into the season to do that?
I mean, you can fold on your, you know, the final month of these games, final 15 games left.
This is outside what I think, because I still think they should go for the playoffs. I mean, you never know. In the last couple of games, you play the Denver Nuggets another time. You play the Grizzlies a couple more times. I mean, you can climb up.
I mean, you have to start weighing your options. You have to start looking at, oh, yeah, we can hopefully make the playoffs with this core. But
I like how we're 14 games left in the season. You're like, you got to weigh your options. Like, I feel like they've weighed them by now.
Well, you would think, but they beat a good team like Washington on the road, and then they fold against the Sixers.
You've still got big decisions moving forward, like he was trying to get at when you're talking about.
Before I so rudely interrupted.
No.
I always do that.
No, he was right on the cusp of, when you're looking at weighing your options, like you were saying, you've still got an offseason ahead of you where you've got to decide whether or not you want to make these fiscal decisions and commit this money to certain players on your team when you haven't seen what they can do on a consistent basis. And I think that segues us really well into our next talking point.
Sure.
As to where each of us individually feels like Nerlens Noel has been since the trade and his performance. And, you know, it's kind of on again, off again. When he's been on the floor, it's looked great. But then, you know, he has these, you know, there's 2 or 3 games off where he's resting, and you've got to decide whether or not in the long term you want to make a financial commitment to a guy like that where you might get 50 games, you might get 80. You just don't know.
Yeah, that's a huge decision, because you're looking at, I mean, everybody at the trade deadline. I mean, I wrote a piece for Mavs Fanatic. You can go look at it, but the Mavericks shouldn't make a trade because they had been so bad at trades that most of their trades were net negatives and not even positives or just neutral, just like net negatives. Like, they got the worst end of the deal every single time. And sometimes they didn't get anything out of the deal, like not even a single asset out of a deal. And so you're looking at the trade deadline and you're saying, well, the Mavericks shouldn't make a deal. Just stay pat. It's fine. Let's just keep it. We'll try and, you know, roll the dice again in free agency later or however they're going to do this. And then they swing for the fences, get Nerlens Noel. Everyone is happy. All MFFLdom is happy. Like, they are all over the moon about Nerlens Noel. And then now these injuries start popping up. You got guys on our timeline. I mean, you guys are all seeing the Mavs Fanatic timeline. There's people saying, you know, I think we tweeted out, are you worried about Nerlens Noel? We got tons of responses from people, from everybody saying, yes, get him out of here.
Are you worried about Nerlens Noel?
Personally, personally, you have to be a little worried. Just we were just talking about Parsons, shipping out Parsons.
Yeah,
and he
I think
has
that's a great point about how, okay, well, we got to last offseason, we were unsure what was going to happen with Chandler Parsons, and something was telling the Mavs coaching staff.
And the trainers
that, okay, there's some sort of red flag here where we don't want to offer him the max. Parsons is thinking, okay, I'm going to get the max, ends up signing with the Grizzlies, but... I mean, I think we have a lot of faith in our training staff at this point to say, hey, I think that the great thing about this situation is that you bring in Noel for a couple months or however long
left. Give him an audition.
And then you give the training staff an opportunity to look at him see what's going on with him as opposed to okay, we get to free agency and you get 1 hour with him and you have no idea what he actually has there. This is a good opportunity for training staff.
Very good point.
When you move into the offseason and you wonder Nerlens Noel get a max contract, it's a risk I think you have to take. I mean, he's 22. I mean, granted, you have to look at potential injuries or whatever, but I think it's a risk the Mavs have to go for. I think you can't not take it. You make a big trade like that, you don't want to not have him on your roster long term.
I think from a financial standpoint, I think the fact that he's a restricted free agent, you can let somebody sign him to a offer sheet and see what he's worth, see what the market is for him.
That's the scary part, though.
You have an opportunity to, was it 2 days, 2-3 days to match that?
That's true.
As opposed to like race straight out of free agency, hey, we're going to offer him the max. Well, let's see what the market is first. Let's see what he gets as opposed to. Hey.
Yeah, you don't end
it's
up being
more,
a, Memphis,
more controlled.
A Memphis Grizzlies where now you're stuck with an asset in a Chandler Parsons that is just, I mean, can we call
can't
him?
Can't give you 10 points a game.
can't give you 7 points a game.
He didn't sign with the Grizzlies. He robbed the Grizzlies.
Are we going to look back at Chandler Parsons the same way we look back at the Brock Osweiler deal for the Texans?
Oh, my gosh.
That same guy.
That's a good comparison.
I think it's going to be worse, to be honest with you.
I don't know that.
I think it's going
to
be worse.
I don't know. I think Osweiler was pretty bad. He got traded to the Browns and got released by the Browns. That says a lot when
Brock
you get released
Osweiler
by the Browns.
Was so bad that the NFL doesn't do this. Like, this is one of the first times that anybody's ever seen an NFL team do a salary dump where they literally just send a contract away just to get rid of
it. And here's the reason I say it's
they
worse,
they invented
though.
That move in the NFL because of Brock Osweiler.
Specifically for Brock Osweiler, and it was anything that we can do to get out of this move. But I think that the Parsons contract is worse because he has no trade value. There's not even a market for you to trade him.
Yeah.
At least with Osweiler, you were able to move him and make that salary dump. The Grizzlies are going to have to waive him, and they're going to eat most of that contract.
I get
that. There's no market for you to even trade a $90 million guy.
I get that argument. But at the end of the day, again, Brock Osweiler just got released by the Cleveland Browns. When
it's hard to go against that.
Players go to the Cleveland Browns just to be on a squad, and you got released by the Browns. That
What's
says
the equivalent
a lot.
Of that, being cut by the Nets?
Twice.
Now?
How about being cut by the Nets twice?
Is that like being signed on a 10-day contract by the Nets and then...
And then another 10-day and getting cut again?
And then getting cut, yeah.
It'd actually be like getting cut by the Knicks. And I know that sounds horrible, but since the Knicks are a straight train wreck every single year, it'd be just like getting released by the Knicks.
What's the difference between the Nets and the Knicks?
No. You do not want to ask this question.
I'm sorry.
You do not want to ask this question.
I forgot to ask. I'm talking to the New York native right now. I'm sorry.
Turn that.
You don't want to ask that question.
No, but Mike was getting to something. DuPont was getting to something. You're getting cut by the Nets twice. Who was that? There's somebody on the Mavs roster that got cut by the Nets twice.
Yogi Ferrell.
No, I'm not saying Brock Osweiler. Kevin Yogi Ferrell.
No way. Hey, remember, hey,
Nick
for the
is
record.
Wholeheartedly endorsing Brock Osweiler as the comeback player of the year.
Brock Osweiler has a ring.
That would be the
Redemption.
First comeback.
That's so sad.
The first comeback player of the year that wasn't injured the year before just sucked.
Again.
It's really bad.
Brock Osweiler has a ring.
So Nerlens Noel, let's since this is sort of a round table, we do these round tables on Mavs Fanatic where we do the written word, and we do these round tables with questions. But let's do a round table here since we got four of us here. Show of hands / audible because this is a podcast.
Wow.
Who's for signing Nerlens Noel? Because it's probably going to be a max deal, which is going to be about $22 million.
Yay or nay? Say it.
Nay. I'm against it.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm all in.
I'm all in on the yay.
Yeah, I'm all in. And Taman and I agree, which is weird. So
very rare.
DuPont, you need to state your case like right now.
The reason I'm against it, and like I said, Mike had a great counter argument to this. I really had no qualms with this counter argument to this, and being the fact that the Mavs having Nerlens right now, they get a closer look and evaluation at him moving forward. But looking at the market and looking at $23 to $25 million for a guy that may not be able to give you 60 games a season, you still don't know. He's been in the league 4 years now. The optimism for me is just not there. I'm really cautious when I hear numbers like that for a guy that has maybe played, you know, a span of 80 games in his four seasons in the NBA, and that's just that's very telling for me. I look at numbers like that, and just the fact that when the guy was in Philadelphia, he had a even when the situation with the three bigs kind of worked itself out organically when one was hurt and Nerlens was able to play, it was still a lot of the one game on, three games off, even when he was cleared to be the main guy. So it's just a cautious thing for me. I understand that you have to go and you have to take your shot at it. And for all you know, he could be exactly what you need in terms of a rim runner, in terms of a Tyson Chandler type of protector at the rim.
And what are we, 15 minutes in? We're 5 minutes in our conversation. There's
Tyson Chandler.
Tyson Chandler comparison.
I mean, that's Maverick. When you look at the guy, he's long. He run. I mean, he's a rim runner in every sense of the word.
The comparison's good.
You're not really going to see him try to take the ball outside of 15 feet. He has a better jumper than Tyson. I'll give him that. Their free throws are about the same. I mean, I feel like if you could get right now, and that could be another yay or nay, if you could get Tyson Chandler type of production out of Nerlens Noel, would you be willing to sign him to a $23 million per year deal?
Yes.
Yep.
Yay.
Yeah, completely.
And I can't argue with that. And you're getting, rolling the dice is essentially what I'm saying.
Where the Tyson Chandler comparison drops is that Nerlens Noel can do a couple things. We saw this in the Wizards game. We saw this in a couple games on the road recently where Nerlens can step out and he can guard some of these guards. You know, like he can stay in front of them and not look ridiculous and not get turned around or dropped. Or, you know, some of these guys that just get crossed over and they're a big guy that can't move their feet and they're just plodding. And, like, he can step out and guard some of those guys. And at least we can, you know, the Mavericks can switch stuff if they need to on defense because of what he can do.
Another reason why I want the Mavs to sign Nerlens Noel is, I mean, let's take a look at Tyson Chandler. When Tyson Chandler, before he got to Dallas the first time in 2011, this was a guy who had an injury history also. But he was played such a huge role in the Mavericks winning a championship. So the Mavericks took a risk by trading for him. And this is another risk too. I mean, this is a guy in Nerlens Noel. I like the fact that he's younger. I like the fact that he's 22. I mean, granted, we can always talk about the, you know, if it doesn't work out, it's a bad signing. But that's why it's a risk. If it does work out, then the Mavericks have a top quality player and secured for them for a good 4 or 5 years. And you have to like that. That's something you have to like for this team, especially with the Mavericks. Mike mentioned earlier, Dirk's not going to be here forever. They're kind of turning the page, getting younger. The fact that they have a younger star, you can't get mad at that. I say go for it.
I hate to the only thing about that when I listen is that the difference between the two is that before the Mavs acquired Tyson Chandler, He had already had a vast history of playoff experience. He had already been on several teams that were
including that Bobcats team that was like the worst team in NBA history.
Oh yeah, and let's also mention that Denver Nuggets team. That Denver Nuggets team that he played on,
and that Knicks team where they actually went to the playoffs.
And those Nuggets went to the Eastern Conference Finals. But I'm interested to hear what you have to say, Mike.
Oh man, I don't know, man, because I think at this point when
Western Conference Finals, excuse me.
Well, what are you asking?
What?
The Tyson Chandler, he didn't go to the Eastern Conference Finals with the Nuggets.
Well, I will point out this. the one big difference that I'll say when we acquired Tyson Chandler is that he was on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at signing Noel. But we're talking about signing Noel long-term for a max contract, and that's obviously a big risk. But
that is
a big difference. But the fact that he's 22, I think there are going to still be some teams that are willing to take
He's the youngest
guy
on the team, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I think he's
22.
Besides the 22. Whoever like 10-day guys they bring in, he's still the youngest guy on this team.
Are we not counting the 10-day guys?
They're in and out. I mean,
I got a question. How many people this year at the beginning of the season thought Harrison Barnes was going to have a breakout year?
Not me. Shocked. I was shocked.
So let me ask you, would you have signed Barnes to a max contract if you had the opportunity.
Barnes didn't have the differences in the games played, the minutes played. Barnes showed up while he was in Golden State. I mean, I know,
but would you have signed up to a max deal?
I had a
no.
We did before.
I'm
the season,
being honest right now. I'm just being honest.
Nothing wrong.
But the production that he showed you shows. I mean, obviously shows that he's been worth it. You know,
right?
You're rolling the dice. And yeah, sometimes you come up like Harrison Barnes. It's a risk.
Yeah, it's a risk. And I think with Nerlens, I mean, I think it's a roll of the dice. You have to roll. I mean, you know, go for it. I mean, if it doesn't work out, it's unfortunate. But if it does work out, you have two young stars in Barnes and Noel on your roster. You know, long term.
There's a guy before the season, we did this, you know, out in front of AAC, where before the home opener, where I was asking people, what do you think about Harrison Barnes? You know, his face was like all over AAC. They had the, you know, the fan things that they do, and it was Harrison Barnes, and it was all this stuff. And I asked this guy, I said, Harrison Barnes, you know, signed to the Mavericks for $94 million. Do you think that's worth it? And the guy looked at me, he goes, I don't know anything worth $94 million.
I'd be right there with them, brother. I'm sorry. I mean, 30. You look at 27, 28 million per for. I mean, the guy's been great. He's a 20. I didn't think he would be able to take that kind of leap in his offensive production. But I mean, just in the we're looking at him from a 50,000 foot view. Just looking at him a little bit closer, and I understand it's 82 games in the season. But what did he do last night?
The Mavericks didn't do anything last night.
None of them. Philly. What did your $30 million player do against Philly?
I mean, it's unfortunate, though. The Mavericks didn't do it.
He had 5 points.
The Mavericks didn't do anything last night. It was a collective effort of nobody doing anything.
I mean, Nerlens showed up.
Well.
Nerlens showed up.
He went back home to Philly.
Oh, and Justin Anderson showed up.
Oh, wait. Too soon. Hashtag too soon.
But no, I mean, you're going to have bad nights or whatever. But we all knew that. I mean, with Harrison Barnes, it's still a process. Excuse me, trust the process. But, I mean, it's a process right now. He's still a young guy. I mean, if we go look at every star that, you know, when they're young, they're going to have bad games. It happens.
But if the Mavericks don't re-sign Nerlens Noel, then you look back at Justin Anderson, you know, trading for him, are they going to super regret that? Not just regular regret, super regret.
You would think, you know, instant reaction. Yes, they would regret it in the talent that they sent away. But I think you would after maybe some, you know, a couple of months to let that, you know, going into free agency, going into the offseason, once people are able to look back and realize all of the cap money that is freed up in letting Justin Anderson go, and maybe, you know, potentially wherever you decide to go with Nerlens Noel, when you look at the cap that you freed up there. And you're talking about you still got two $30 million players on the roster. That might have been a move that you just had to make, because you look at Harrison Barnes and Justin Anderson and what they both do on the floor as forwards, and they just don't really complement each other well.
They don't complement each other well?
I don't think that they do. No, I don't think that they complement. I don't think that they work well together on the court. Harrison Barnes and Justin Anderson.
Me and Mike's eyebrows both disagree with that. Me and Michael.
I love how you said Mike's eyebrows.
You know, here's my thing with Justin Anderson is, yeah, he's been here, what, 2 years? He was here 2 years, and I don't know what kind of player he was.
He was supposed to be
a 3-and-D kind of guy, but, you know, with energy. Like
is he a jump shooter? Is he just an energy guy off the bench? I mean, he was just so inconsistent when he was here. So when we gave him up, I feel like what –
You never really knew what you had.
Yeah, but I didn't feel like we gave up something.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Because it wasn't a definite anything.
Yeah, he wasn't a definite, like, I mean, that jump. So, you look at his jump shot, I mean, it looks different every time he shoots the ball. Sure. And I have, literally, he throws it up, and I'm like, I have no idea if it's going to go in. Is it going to be a swish?
So that makes you regret it even less.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, was he an asset? I don't see him as an asset.
I don't either. I agree with you.
And you guys are totally forgetting with this Nerlens deal. They gave up Andrew Bogut. I mean, that's a lot to give up.
Gosh, man, I love Andrew Bogut.
Can we talk about Andrew Bogut?
I cried many tears.
Come on, you have to feel bad for Bogut.
We have to, because he was silence. The Mavericks sold Andrew Bogut gear in the hangar. We needed to talk about Andrew Bogut and he goes into the Cavaliers game and he didn't even make it 2 minutes.
Karma's undefeated.
What did Andrew Bogut do?
What did Bogut do?
you want to come out and you want to talk about how, you know, what your feelings are on the team that you're currently playing for. When I'm talking about when he was playing for the Mavericks.
Oh, yeah.
And he had those thoughts and those opinions that he expressed about the Mavericks and the direction they were going. I mean, karma's undefeated. It came right back around and got him when he went to Cleveland on the contender, quote unquote, that he wanted to play for.
In his defense, though, hashtag we the media ate that stuff up, man. anytime Bogut would talk, we were over there.
It was a great quotes. Yeah. All the time.
It was great stuff. Yeah. So it's – yeah. Andrew Bogut's gone.
if we're gonna say it's karma, it's just really unfortunate that it happened, 52 seconds into the game on his new team. That's just really unfortunate.
Can we talk about the leading scorer from last night, Dwight Powell?
I mean, yay, Dwight.
Okay, so Justin Anderson and Dwight Powell to me are on the same sort of plane. And obviously the Mavericks think more of Dwight Powell than they think of Justin Anderson because they gave him that contract this summer. What do we think about Dwight Powell going forward / right now?
I think for me, it's one of those things with Rick Carlisle, and just sometimes I don't understand what he's trying to do with his team. I mean, like, he doesn't get consistent minutes. So even sometimes I'm still sure.
Yeah, he gets DNP CDs sometimes.
Yeah, and then he'll play like 5 games straight, or, you know, we'll throw in a random start. And it's just like, I still don't know what Dwight Powell is in the whole scheme of things. Is he a building block going forward? You know, what are we going to do with him? You know, I personally like his game. I like his energy. But I would like to see him get consistent time, because we traded away Bogut. We got rid of Williams. And then, okay, you think this opens up time for guys like the Powells of the world to get consistent playing time to see what you have. And I still don't know what we have with him because he doesn't get consistent time.
And he's 26, soon to be in like 120 days, going to be 20. Or he's 25, gonna be 26 soon. I mean, this is the prime of an NBA player's career. If you're not sure what we're getting and stepping into the prime of an NBA player's career, I'm like, I don't know what to do with you. And the athleticism's gonna fade eventually.
I agree with both of you. I think he's eventually at some
point. What is up with you today? You just agree with everybody.
I know. I'm in an agreeing
mood.
Yes,
man.
DuPont has taken your spot as the guy that disagrees.
I apologize.
I know. You're being me, which is weird. I'm sure before this podcast ends,
on your home turf.
I'm sure Nick. No. I guarantee by the time this podcast ends, Nick will say something absolutely ridiculous, and I'll have to really respond to that. But no, I agree
with
you.
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, right? I agree with both of you guys saying about Dwight Powell, but I think eventually he's going to be used as a trade asset. They're going to throw him in a trade to get something for him.
Here's my thing with Dwight Powell. When I watch Dwight Powell play, I see him as a much rawer form of Aaron Gordon, and here's the problem with that.
Rawer than Aaron Gordon?
And he's older than Aaron.
That's like sushi that's not out of the ocean yet.
And he's six or seven years older than Aaron Gordon. So yeah. That's the dilemma here. That's where we are at this point. He hasn't really carved out in it. Like Michael said, he hasn't really had the opportunities. Excuse me. Like Lark said, he hasn't really.
You're
had,
Michael.
He hasn't Mike really and had Mike. He hasn't really had the opportunities. Maybe the opportunities haven't been there for him consistently to show what his role is within the team, what his role is as an individual asset. But when I watch him, you see the athleticism is there. You see the ability to protect the rim is there. You see that, you know, he has a very raw outside game that he's still trying to develop. You see him like to take a few shots around the three-point line every couple of games.
Every practice, man.
And then he gets that Rick Carlisle stare. And then he gets that priceless Rick Carlisle stare. But you really just, like I said, you really don't know what you have in him at this point, at this venture in time. And I agree with what you said. He could be a trade asset, a trade commodity somewhere down the road, because there's still a level of uncertainty. You don't know what you're going to get out of him with more minutes.
And Dwight Powell's contract going forward, he's making just about $8.5 million this year, $9 million next year, $9.5 million the year after that. I mean, and then it's a player
get
option.
Money.
So
I wish I had some.
That's
of
about
that
money. That's about 10% of an NBA salary cap. So that's a pretty good deal for a guy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you know how much Isaiah Thomas is getting paid this year? $6 million.
We want to talk about super underpaid guys.
Matthew Dellavedova makes more than Isaiah Thomas.
30-point score, $6.7 million. Dwight Powell, keep getting them checks, brother.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Isaiah Thomas. I wanted to talk to you about this.
Oh, I have a feeling. See, I knew it couldn't last. Nick's about to say something ridiculous.
If you look at Isaiah Thomas's numbers his rookie year, in the games that he started for Sacramento, and Sacramento is a disgrace of an organization. They are the Knicks West.
The Knicks are different. It's two different types of disgrace, but go ahead.
Still not worse than Brooklyn.
As
I can argue that.
But just franchise dysfunction slash, like, you can't even walk into the stadium without thinking that maybe you're going to get kicked out just for being there.
That's the Knicks.
Does anyone hashtag know free Charles Oakley.
Does anyone know where the Kings Arena is? Do the people of Sacramento know where the Kings play?
The Golden One Arena? They love that place. And Sacramento, Sacramento fans are awesome. They're really good fans.
I got to say this real quick. The pun is really about to get me started on the Knicks. I'm just saying.
The engine's getting revved up, and we really need to stop it before it gives into full throttle.
It's almost there.
So if you look at Isaiah Thomas's numbers in his rookie season, they're really similar to Yogi's numbers so far this season. And I think that it would take a couple of breaks. It would take a lot of work. I think Yogi could put it in. I think he could be a guy like Isaiah Thomas. Maybe not get to the level where he's, you know, 30 points a game, you know, running the Celtics. But I think he could be a guy like that. I think he could be the same type of player.
I want to hear DuPont's response on that.
He's going to agree with me. I can tell just by the look in his eyes.
I
wrong.
He's deciding what time, what place to take right now, what side he wants to take.
No, I'm not deciding because I don't see the two in that light. But I don't see the comparison between Isaiah and Yogi, but what I do see, further than them being both being short guards, you know, in stature, but
they can shoot the three.
Production wise, I don't want to turn the page on what Yogi could be in terms of comparing him to Isaiah Thomas, because you really want to look at the jump that he can make from year one to year two, and that'll be our biggest, you know, our biggest telling point in looking at what he's able to do and what skills he's able to grow and develop and how he's able to hone his game this offseason without the pressure of knowing where your next game check's going to come from. And so, you know, Isaiah Thomas, you know, even when he left Sacramento after that season, you know, he still had to figure things out. In Phoenix, you know, there were still teams that were turning the book on him, and it kind of lit that fire. He had some great mentors. I don't want to go too deep on Isaiah Thomas because I know that's not what we're here for, but he's got some really great mentors out there in Washington on the West Coast, yeah. Jamal Crawford, Allen Iverson. I mean, some great guards that you want to be mentored by. But, yeah, go
Jason
ahead.
Jason Terry, the Jet, too, right?
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, Jason Terry, who's still getting them checks. Keep getting them checks, brother.
I got to say, DuPont, I thank you for giving a political answer. I love your answer because I would have just – you just said it very nicely.
He's way nicer than you.
He probably is. I can't even.
Of the three guys in this room, other than me, he is probably the nicest.
I don't know. I think Lark's nicer than you. You have like a.
No, I didn't put myself in that.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Anyway, that was an awkward silence. But
still figuring this out. New dynamic.
No, this
is great of a time.
30 minutes in and we had our first awkward silence.
Yeah, right.
I'll take that.
We're supposed to be professionals, though.
We are professionals. Maybe not next.
This is good of a time as ever to tell our friends about our friends at Draft.
Yeah, we're going to tell everybody about the Draft. Hey, do you play Daily Fantasy?
I don't, but I should.
You totally should. You should with Draft. Get this. Your chances of winning with Draft are almost three times better than on FanDuel or DraftKings. The data shows almost 90% of players lose on DraftKings. On FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. If you're not a pro.
Those are not good odds.
Yeah, I know.
If those are the odds that Nerlens Noel was going to be a good player, I would agree with DuPont saying that we shouldn't sign him.
Well, anyway, if you're not a pro and not spending hours.
I just set that up on a tee for you.
I know, I did. If you're not a pro and not spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing on Draft. You'll win more often. It's statistically proven. So join me and download Draft right now. Just search Draft in the App Store and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code ABPN, that's Almighty Ballers Podcast Network, when you download, and you will get a 100% bonus when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store and be sure to enter the promo code ABPN. Do it, please. You know you want to. Just do it.
That was so seductive. It was like you were selling me Valentine's Day flowers.
I want you to do it.
I had lots of words flying through my head, and seductive was not one of those words.
Ooh. What was one of those words then?
The way
I'm
he ended
curious.
It. The way he ended their
it's
promo.
Getting really awkward, isn't it? We are way off topic. Come on.
All right, seriously, let's get back to the Mavericks.
What's an astronautic podcast without like going off topic a little?
No, let's get back to the Mavericks real quick because I want to bring this up, and we kind of teased it a little bit, but Wesley Matthews, you know, how big is him right now? Because obviously he's been in and out of lineup, he's been out, been in, and the Mavericks need him. And if the Mavericks are going to want to make the playoffs, they really need him. If they're going to want to organically tank, as Michael Larkin, our good friend, Mike Fisher down at 105.3 The Fan told us.
Shout out Mike Fisher.
Yeah, shout out to Mike Fisher. Where do they go from here if Wesley Matthews is out, and where do they go where he's in?
The Wes Matthews situation, and I think it is a situation, is he is one of those guys that has to be in the right frame of mind to be a solid, you know, contributing player. Because, I mean, that Suns game that they dropped in the last couple of minutes, he was not right in that whole game. He just was making mistakes and doing all this stuff, and I think he had only like 7 points in that game or something like that, shooting the ball well. And then I'm walking down to the media room, to the presser room, to, you know, go hear Carlisle, and Wes Matthews is booking it. he's leaving. Like, usually he stays around. He's, you know, he gets to the locker room, like, you know, a little bit after some other guys. He's not there like right away, but usually he's there and, you know, talking to guys, and he's always available for media. But he was booking it out of there, and he was wet. He was like dripping. And so I'm not sure if that was still sweat, like if he didn't even take a shower and just like, you know, got ready and just like left, or if he showered real quick and just left. But I mean, he was getting out of there fast. And I think that this whole season has been super rough on him, because has he been on a team that's been this bad? He was on Utah. He was on Portland. I'm not sure he's been on a team that's been this bad. And you don't know how that can wear on a guy that's known success so much. You know, like Wes Matthews, he's been on really, really good teams.
I'd have to look that up if any of those Portland teams or Utah teams that he was on were bad at the time when he was on them. But
were that bad? I'm not sure about that.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
The Wes Matthews situation is a mentality. And I think he's, you know, a super competitive guy, and I think he definitely, every time he gets on the floor, he wants to play hard, and he almost tries too hard at certain times. You know, he tries to create too much offense, tries to, you know, defend guys just one-on-one, and maybe he could use some help in different situations. But, I mean, I guess I agree with you that the Mavs need Wes
what
Matthews.
What is wrong with this? This is weird. This is just odd. Why are we agreeing with each other?
But to say that the Mavs need Wesley Matthews to be a successful team is not like a super hot take that needs to be like affirmed.
Yeah, but on this team, yeah, they need him. And if the way he's, you know, been in and out, it's, yeah.
I don't even know that much, you know, and I'm not here. I feel like I'm right now just bashing. And look, Wesley Matthews is a great player. But I don't know how in he's been this season when you look at the totality of the season. I don't know if at any point he's been through this season. You know, you're looking at the apex of his career. He was a 40% three-point shooter.
Lockdown defender.
This season, he's putting up 7 threes a game, so he's still taking the looks, but he's shooting 37% from three. I mean, he's still giving you a steal a night, so the 37%, that's not bad. You know, the numbers aren't bad enough for you to think, for you to assess the problem and think we've got to make a change. He's still giving you a steal per game. He's still giving you the effort on the defensive end, which is what's keeping him on the court and which makes him such a vital asset, because he knows how to defend on the court and defend within Rick Carlisle's scheme. And with all of that makes him a contributor from a team aspect. But offensively, he just hasn't given you the spark that you've needed from him this season, which you see in a game like a 114-76 loss.
I think one of the underrated aspects of his game, I mean, we sit there and look at Wes's game and we just say he's, you know, three-pointer, but he's often asked to guard the team's, you know, the opposing team's best player. And I think
he's got like 6 inches on him sometimes.
Yeah, and so I think that takes a toll on him. I think, you know, he's going through this hip injury deal
true
right now.
Player.
And yeah, and you know, I think we forget about that sometimes, that, hey, okay, he's doing what he's doing on offense, but on defense, he brings a lot to the table.
And he, at the beginning of the season, he was excited that they brought in Harrison Barnes, and he even said at media day that, like, oh, I get to guard my position now, which means he gets to guard twos. And that hasn't been the case, because the Mavericks have changed their, you know, their style. They got Yogi and Seth in the starting lineup, so they pushed Wes Matthews back to the three spot. Yeah, so he's having to guard all these wings and
bigger guys.
Real quick, would you classify Wes Matthews as a two-way player or a 3-and-D player?
What's the difference? Are you saying that you think that there's more?
I think with the two-way, with the two-way player, you see, like you were getting to, there's more on that offensive game. With the 3-and-D guy, you really just look for him to pull the trigger from beyond the arc. And I mean, you're looking at his field goal percentage. I think he's right around 50%.
On a championship level team, he's a 3-point shooter. I don't think you want him, you know, handling the ball very much, or, you know, trying to create. And we saw that a lot last year, where the Mavs just didn't have any you know, offensive creators like at all. And so you're just trying to get offense from anywhere. And so you're having Wes Matthews go out there and try to, you know, dribble drive and do stuff. And his post-ups have not been good. I don't know the numbers on it, but his post-ups have just been, every time he posts up, I just like hold my breath and I'm like, is this shot going to go wild, or is this shot, you know, like, is it going to rim out, or what's going to, so I think he's a 3-and-D player. If you're looking at a team that's going to be a playoff team.
Right. I would say, you know, with Wes, the thing I don't like, I guess, with him working with Barnes is more of an isolation type guy at the top.
Yeah,
I think when you don't mix them together, you don't get them playing any sort of pick and roll. You know, I think that limits both of them, you know, and their chemistry together. But you know, I don't know what you say about that.
And on the same end, in retrospect, that kind of makes Barnes and Noel, I guess, an easier sell, because you're looking at what you were just talking about, and you know, Barnes being more of an isolation at the top of the key player, in those pick and roll, that pick and roll dynamic is gonna it would obviously be, you know, very advantageous for the Mavs offense when you've got a guy like Nerlens Noel who can actually run at the rim, as opposed to, I don't know, maybe, and no, this is no disrespect to Salah, but when Salah is running at the rim, you know, sometimes you're wondering if he's going to finish, or if it's just going to get to the basket.
Is that how every sentence with Salah Mejri's name in it starts? No offense.
No disrespect to Salah, but let's disrespect him a little bit.
That's what this podcast should have been called. No disrespect to Salah.
Because when Salah makes a play, it's so much energy on the court.
I think another point I think we've actually talked you into a max contract for Noel.
I think he tried to slide that in there, but I think we talked you into it.
Trust the process.
That is an interesting dynamic. I'll give you that, Mike. When you just made that point, it made me think about that. It's an interesting dynamic. I don't know if it's a $30 million dynamic or a $22, $25, $26 million dynamic, but it's definitely an interesting dynamic that you would think that you'd be able to build on, you know, making this a more pick-and-roll catered offense. But, I mean, when you're looking at the overall dynamic of the offense, it starts right. It's got to start with the coach, and you're looking forward, moving forward. Do you think, I mean, Rick Carlisle's only, he's not in his 60s yet. Do you think this can be a coach, Rick Carlisle can continue to be a coach for the Mavs in the future?
I think that question is, does Rick Carlisle want to, and could Rick Carlisle stand another season like this where the Mavericks are?
Because sometimes
it
just looks like he's so frustrated.
Oh, he definitely is.
I think.
Is his hair falling out?
It's already out.
I think Rick will be fine. I think Rick and Donnie and Cuban are on the same page when they know the future of the team, that the direction that they want to go in. They signed Barnes during the offseason. They traded for Nerlens Noel. They have some pieces, and I think, you know, Rick's all in on that. He knows that this wasn't the team he signed with back in 2008, a championship contending team. He knows they're kind of in a rebuilding phase. So yeah, I think it's, you know, Carlisle's going to get frustrated because Carlisle doesn't like to lose.
Sure.
But he, I think he understands the situation that the Mavericks are in.
I think he hates losing more than he enjoys, gets pleasure out of winning.
Yeah, right.
And that's how a lot of greats make it, you know?
Side note, Rick Carlisle could definitely, in his prime, take on Nicholas Brusino in 1-on-1.
And LaVar Ball.
I'm sure.
We're just going in.
Most underrated Celtic, I'm not going to say of all time, but one of the top underrated Celtics.
I think Rick Carlisle looks at Mark Cuban and Donnie Nelson and looks at, I know that was a really big statement for him to just make and then just turn his mic off and walk off. But
I said not of all time.
You said one of the most top underrated Celtics of all time.
One of the most underrated Celtics, not of all time.
All right. Okay.
So, I think in the same sense,
when you're saying one of the most underrated Celtics, that has to mean of all time, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You have to give it a time frame.
Gosh, no. That's and thinking about the span of 17 championships, I ought to just cut my mic off.
Turn it off. End it.
I'll turn it off.
But I think Rick Carlisle looks at the Mavericks and he looks at Donnie Nelson and Cuban and this youth movement and looks at it and goes, fine, I'll win with them too. Like, you know, I think he's sort of begrudgingly going into this, and he, you know, respects the organization.
And they do it some nights.
And he's like, I can win with this team. Yeah. Sure, give me whoever.
They give it to you some nights, and you're like, wow, this team really could.
Like that Wizards win, like, you know.
This team is beating play. This team could contend with playoff teams, but then you've got to play the other teams too. You've got to
play everybody. You have to play the
76ers. Here's the thing, also, I didn't mean to cut you off, Lark, but the thing is, the Mavericks have a direction finally with Barnes and Noel, And I think that if Carlisle were to leave, or if something were to happen to Carlisle where he just wasn't the coach anymore, that would hurt the Mavericks long term. I don't think that would be really good for the Mavs. So I think Carlisle's just going to stick through it. It's hard. Like you said, I think he hates to lose more. Actually, he loves to win. But at the end of the day, Carlisle's a huge, huge piece for this particular young Mavs team.
So to end this podcast, the direction of the Mavericks, we have to look at this next – I mean, the end games. There's 14 games left, I'm pretty sure. And they play the Nets next, which you have to think that's, you know, a take-care-of-business game. Of course, you thought that last night was a take-care-of-business game.
42 points says no.
After that, they have a four-game home stretch with the Warriors, the Clippers, the Raptors, and the Thunder.
They're going to win all four.
What? Who is this person I'm looking at across the desk from me right now?
I might be being a little sarcastic there.
Man. So we have – and then after that, they play five-game road trip. Pelicans, Grizzlies, Bucks, Kings, Clippers. Some of those games are winnable. I know some of those.
Some of them are losable.
If the Pelicans sit DeMarcus Cousins, they might win the game.
The Pelicans might win the game.
Yeah.
They've played better.
They're better without him.
They just beat the Rockets.
They beat the Rockets the other night.
Okay, so instead of the schedule, let's talk about – so a lot of Mavs fans, and we're in our timeline, we're in our mentions at Mavs Fanatics saying, why didn't they go make a play for DeMarcus Cousins? You know, why didn't they go after DeMarcus Cousins? Now do they see why the Mavericks didn't make a play for DeMarcus Cousins, or do you guys think they still should have?
I mean, the Mavericks, they tried, and I don't think it would have been a bad thing if they gotten Cousins, but I'm not surprised that it's not really working out in New Orleans right now because they acquired him midseason. When you have a superstar get acquired to your team, sometimes you have to build that chemistry, and that chemistry is not there in New Orleans. So it might take a little bit more time. You might have to wait till next season.
Or sometimes it becomes Pau Gasol to the Lakers where they go to the finals. Or Rasheed Wallace to the Pistons where they go to the finals.
Pau Gasol to the Bulls.
Listen,
team falls apart.
Listen, sometimes it can work. I'm not saying it can't, but there have been instances before. Think about when Jason Kidd initially got traded back to the Mavericks. The Mavericks did not play that well afterwards when he first got here in 2008. They sunk to a 7 seed. So, I mean, sometimes there's all that chemistry has to build it. I mean, New Orleans doesn't have a lot of talent anyway, but getting a guy like that, you have to build that chemistry.
They really didn't put any shooters around those guys. Etuan Moore is one of their main contributors. You know, God bless Etuan Moore, but if any of y'all could tell me where he went to school, I've got a high five for you right now.
Etuan Moore went to...
No computers.
Let me say Marquette.
No. Exactly. I don't know. I don't know where Etuan Moore went.
Oh, he could have went to...
Probably nobody Marquette. Knows.
I mean, Marquette. Hey, watch out. Solomon Hill scored 30 points last night.
You never know.
There we go.
Taman, you didn't know who Solomon Hill was.
I have zero regret for not getting DeMarcus Cousins. Real short and sweet.
Really?
Zero regret. No.
But I say the points of fact, this is why you end up with a guy like with Noel, where you Purdue. Don't... Yeah, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if the Mavericks had traded for Boogie, would you have been okay with them signing him to a max contract? So do you didn't want him?
No. don't bring him and don't give him a max contract. Because first at the genesis of the question.
The genesis.
You bring him in. Yes, you bring him in and you have him. Knowing that you're probably not going to, just like the Pelicans right now, knowing that you're probably not going to be able to sign him to a long-term deal. So he's wreaking havoc in your locker room for 30-plus games, knowing that he's going to be gone in 6 months. He doesn't care. I want to be careful. It's not that he doesn't care, but you look at it and the cost-benefit analysis and you knowing that you're going to be on a different team and you're going to be in a different locker room the next season. There's no risk for him. There's no accountability for DeMarcus Cousins to go into a locker room right now or the Mavericks, the Pelicans, whomever, and sell himself when he knows that 30 teams are going to be lined up for his services in the offseason.
I don't know about 30 teams. I think that's mathematically impossible, but
28.
Really?
29.
Really?
But that's
because the Kings don't want him back. 28.
Yeah. Yeah. The Kings are done with him.
But the Kings. Oh, okay.
They're the Knicks of the West.
No, they're not. It's not the same thing.
All right. We got 5 minutes left. Taman, go in on the Knicks. Just go.
First of all, let me ask DuPont. Do you know why I go in? What do you think of the Knicks?
Just.
I think the Knicks.
Tread lightly.
I think
tread lightly.
I gotta be real careful.
Just be honest.
I'm not even gonna be careful. I'm just gonna say what I feel. I think the Knicks are terrible right now. I feel for Carmelo Anthony. I think Carmelo Anthony is one of the five best scorers in the NBA.
Let me tell you something about the Knicks.
Oh.
The Knicks have been, and I like Carmelo Anthony a lot too, but the New York Knicks are a train wreck, and they've been a train wreck pretty much my entire
since
life.
Whole life. Okay. Yes. So not since Phil Jackson came the first time. Like, let's put this in perspective.
He goes the whole way.
Listen, the New York Knicks, what can...
No love for Latrell Sprewell.
What can... like
Chris Childs punching Kobe on the court, no love.
Yeah, I remember that too. But what can... The weirdest stories always come out of the Knicks. Like, it's just the most bizarre stories that you could think of.
Like punching people in the face on the court.
Derrick Rose randomly just leaving the team. It's like, and this is not.
We still don't know where he went.
Story. Yeah, that yeah. Like, just flew right under the radar.
He was just napping. He was just napping.
Yeah, like just he napping. Just, yeah, it's very bizarre. And see, this, you know the reality TV show Keeping Up with the Kardashians? I like to call them Keeping Up with the Knicks. Because this team, something will happen. Something, and even when they have a good season, right? The Knicks fans up in New York, they get so excited. They're like, "Oh, we're gonna win a championship. We're gonna do this. We're gonna get really close." I guarantee you, it's going to be a complete fail, and it's going to be a fail of miserable proportions. It's going to be the worst. The Knicks will be the first team in NBA history to make the NBA Finals, have a 3-0 lead, and lose. Like it's going. If they ever do make the finals, it will happen.
I harp on the Nets worse though, because they essentially were a real life version of putting lipstick on a pig.
I'm curious
when
Brooklyn, why I said
when the Nets opened up that when the Nets the Russian came over and Prokhorov came over and he made all
he
these
is Russian. The Russian is the name he uses on like online poker
sites.
Yeah.
and Reddit username. And so Prokhorov, he comes over, he makes all these bold claims, he trades for all these washed up players. And he makes these bold claims that the Nets are going to be in the, you know, contending in 5 years or, you know, or else. Well, it's been 5 years. I mean, hey, yeah, you're still you're still in the basketball version of the sunken place from Get Out. That's where Brooklyn
the
is right
place.
Now.
Wow.
Let me tell you why the Knicks are horribly worse though. Because
DuBois just did a Get Out challenge and left
get
the
out.
Room.
Seriously, let me tell you why the Knicks are just worse though. The New York Knicks play in Midtown Manhattan. They play in the world's most famous arena. This is the most touristy
no
area,
argument.
Arguably of the United States.
No
and
argument.
They literally suck every single year. Like they are
Spike is out there.
Yeah, and I feel bad for Spike. Like, I met Spike Lee once, and I asked him, like, what do you think of the Knicks? His response was literally an eye roll. Like, he knows they're a train wreck. He loves them with a passion. But when your biggest fan has a response of an eye roll because he knows how bad they are, it's literally a joke. This team, like,
difference between the two, Knicks have draft picks.
We had Rob Taub, who is a columnist for the Huffington Post up in New York. He came on the Master Knack podcast once when the Master playing the Knicks. And he said what I've been saying for years. Knicks fans don't go to MSG. The only reason why the Knicks get attendance is because it's in Midtown Manhattan, a tourist area, and tourists go to the games. New York Knicks fans literally know this team sucks.
Yeah, as they should. Okay, Mike was talking about Mikhail Prokhorov trying to sell the Nets. So this week, TMZ came out with a video that they found Mark Cuban coming out of a car or going into a car.
I love this.
And they asked him and said, "Hey, Barack Obama wants to, you know, be part of an NBA team. Would you sell him some of the Mavericks?" And he goes, "Yeah, like seriously, right away." He just looks at him and goes, "Yeah, I'll give him, what was it, 10%?
10%
for $300 million. So that is a $3 billion valuation of the Mavericks. The Clippers sold for $2 billion a couple years ago. You guys think that's fair? And how awesome would it be if Barack Obama was part owner of the Dallas Mavericks? Let's end on that.
Well, first of all, that'd be awesome, but I wouldn't say I think the Mavs are worth $3 billion. I mean, it's hard to...
Yeah, because you're not
letting you know what they're actually worth.
Yeah, you're not even getting like the AAC in that either. You know,
I mean, it'd be cool just to say a former president is, you know, a part owner of the Mavericks, but I mean, I don't think is Obama is his net worth $300 million.
No, it would have to be like part of a group.
Yeah, that would, I don't. Yeah, it'd have to definitely be a part of a group because if his net worth's not that, it's not the greatest investment.
It would be like saying Jay-Z owns part of the Nets. You know, it was like less than 1%.
I would like to see Obama and Mark Cuban one-on-one on a game.
That would be sweet. Or on a podcast. Mark Cuban and Barack Obama, if you want to come on this podcast, you're allowed to.
President Obama, Mark Cuban. Hey,
this is your formal invitation
out
to come
there,
on the
yes.
podcast.
Interview request for Mark Cuban and or President Barack
Obama.
Also,
go around the room. Who you got? Obama or
one on one?
Yeah, one on one. Yeah,
Ooh, after seeing Mark Cuban in the Celebrity Game, I'm probably going to go Obama.
Only one of these guys can get me a media credential to Mavs game, so I'm going Mark Cuban all the way.
Ooh. Yeesh. I'm going to go with Obama. I'm going to go with Obama.
Not surprised.
No disrespect. No disrespect to Mark Cuban.
That was a hard choice for you to make.
Yeah, it was a hard one. I don't know how good of a game it would be. I think they would both miss a lot of shots. But
Obama's jumper.
I think
it
would be one of those games where everybody's shooting the three. You know, neither one of the guys are really driving to the basket. You know,
And you know they're getting into their 50s. Obama and Cuban. I don't know how. I agree with you. I don't think they'd be able to go down,
just
trading down
baskets.
The court.
It doesn't even really look like a 1-on-1 game. Yeah. It's just like who's going to shoot and get the rebound and then take it back out, clear it.
All right, there we go. That's the Mavs Fanatic Podcast. We tried something new today doing a roundtable, so thank you so much to Mike and Mike in the afternoon, Mike Lark, Mike DuPont. Guys, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been a great podcast. Definitely check out Draft. If you guys are part of Daily Fantasy, go on there, use the promo code ABPN, and use that. It's great stuff. And we will be back on Monday. We're actually going to be talking to Victor Villalba, the Mavs Spanish radio announcer. He's going to be in studio. We're going to be talking to him.
That'll be fun.
Hopefully he's going to teach me and Taman some Spanish, because our Spanish is not great.
Yeah, I know hola and adios.
Adios! And we will adios from the Mavs Fanatic Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, guys. And also, be sure to check out Dash Radio. There's an app. Lil Wayne is going to have a channel. Snoop Dogg
Snoopy
has a channel.
Snoop Dogg, Donald Trump, beef.
Almighty Baller Podcast Network is going to have a channel, Almighty Baller Radio, and your boys are going to be on it.
By the way, real quick.
Was it Thursdays?
Yeah, Thursdays. By the way,
so check that out.
I'm right, Nick's wrong. That's the end of the story.
It doesn't end the story. That's not even like a story.
Yeah, it's a story. Tim is always right, Nick's always wrong.
No,
remember
it's
that?
Just the thing you say.
It's a beautiful thing I say.
It's just the thing.
Have a great weekend, guys. Have a great time.